Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickit on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickit on Lending, David Lickit.
Hello, everyone. This is Alice Alvey filling in for Dave Lickit, who is traveling today. Dave, of course, would love to be here with us. He sends his greetings. We'll have to try and do our best to make do without him today, but he will definitely be here next week. After the holiday, we have a few things we want to try and catch up for you, so we'll be running through our standard program here with our market update from Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson. We're going to spend a few minutes with our legislative update, and then, of course, later in the program, we'll make sure we talk about the hot topics that matter to you most. And today, a couple of our hot topics are a memo from Fannie Mae and some updates on FHA condos, as well as some hot topics for sales and our underwriting challenges. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get started. Joe Farr, welcome. Happy 4th of July. Hope you had a great weekend. Are you there, Joe?
I guess Joe had a little trouble signing in, Alice, but I'll go ahead and take this over. Scott Sanderson here, and I say happy 4th to everyone out there. Hope you had a safe and fun weekend full of relaxation. Market update. You know, last week the big news was the jobs report, and a little weaker than expected. And net-net, we had a positive week for interest rates. Not a lot of movement, not one of the volatile weeks we've seen of late. And this week is really eerily quiet. The big news of the week is the Treasury auctioning off $73 billion in new debt. And here we go again with the whole supply issue and, you know, how long can the economy, the world economy, all the investors continue to absorb this? We talked a couple of weeks ago, China stepped in and said, we're going to continue buying U.S. debt, and that's good, and that served to settle the market down. And so we'll be watching that very closely. And other than that, in terms of economic reports coming out, Friday is the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Report. And that's the biggest event besides the Treasury auctions. And the reason that's important is the consumer is, you know, obviously very important in terms of the economic engine. And what the consumer does, how they feel, results in how much they spend. And so what's monitored very closely is how people feel about the economy, the direction of their finances, their well-being. And, you know, obviously when we feel good about our finances, we spend more money. If we're concerned, we pull it back in a little bit. And so that's always an important one. And if you see too strong of a number there, that can have a negative impact on interest rates.
Well, you know, that's where I start to get confused, is when is a strong number good, when is a weak number good, and there's so much, you know, in something like a consumer sentiment number that can vary all across the country depending on who you survey, right? So what do you say to
that?
Well,
you know, at a very basic level, what we do is strong economic news would suggest the economy will be doing well, and when the economy is doing well, then you have the potential for inflation. And inflation is the arch enemy of interest rates. And so at Economics 101, as it relates to mortgage-backed securities, that's basically the rule of thumb. If you have strong economic news, chances are that that's going to be negative for interest rates. Because, again, as the economy does well, if you think about it, as the economy does well, you and I have to hire more people, and maybe we have to compete for those people and pay them more money so our costs go up. And so all of a sudden the cost of living goes up, and, you know, hence you have inflation. And interest rates are simply a way to stay a little bit ahead of inflation. So as you have strong economic news and the potential for inflation, chances are rates are going to follow right along.
Now, is it that immediate of a reaction, knowing that how many people need jobs today and how much of a talent pool is out there? I mean, do people really believe inflation would turn around that quickly?
You know, it's amazing, Alice, how sophisticated and fluid the market is. investors, the big boys that invest in these things are so sophisticated and so far ahead of the game. You know, a case in point would be when the Fed comes out and doesn't change interest rates, the consumers say, okay, the Fed left rates alone. Well, the investors anticipated that weeks in advance. The biggest thing that investors react to are surprise numbers. They all had their expectations, their models, their predictions that there will be X amount of jobs lost. It's when a number comes in differently than they expect that you tend to see the big market reactions. And so to answer your question, absolutely. It is, after all, a market, and these guys are in it to make money. And when there is a surprisingly strong number coming out that no one anticipated, then there can be swift and immediate reaction to that. Whether it holds long term, who knows? But a lot of times they're just covering their positions and saying, you know, I don't want to get killed today. I'm going to sit on the sidelines and wait and see how this thing settles out over the next few days.
And really, no matter your size, you've got to try and react because the big guys are moving the market. And so even if you're a smaller shop, you're trying to see the impact of the larger shops will be having, because they'll be reacting because there's so many dollars in small movements.
No question. And that's the old cliche, you know, don't fight the market.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the market's telling you something, then don't be so stubborn and, try to prove otherwise, because we're a very minuscule part of that in the grand scheme of things.
Hey, Joe, were you able to get back on the line?
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Great. I was going to say that, Friday's jobs report was a pretty good example of what Scott was just talking about. Although it was not a big miss, investors had expected somewhere in the 350,000 job loss range, and it came in the 400,000 job loss range, which was more than expected and would indicate a little weakness in the recovery. Also in those numbers, though, if you dig into the details, the wage inflation part of or component of their announcement showed that there was virtually no change in wages from May to June, and the investors or the consensus was that there'd be about a 2/10 of an increase. And the difference between 2/10 and zero, it doesn't sound like a lot, but when you multiply that by 12, that's a big difference in how much wages are going up. And then another little thing came out in that report was that the number of hours worked went down. So both those things really told investors that the job growth going out into the future, or the wages that those people are going to be receiving in the future, may be further out and at a lower growth rate than what they thought, both of which would be would remove pressure from inflation. So it was a favorable thing for the mortgage market on Friday or on Thursday when that report came out, purely because they thought that inflation would be a little lower for longer.
So true to what Scott was saying about, you know, being the arch enemy of interest rates. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I was just going to say that ties in so well to exactly what you were asking there, Alice, that, you know, the fear of inflation. And so when you see that employers are not having to pay more to hire these workers, and those fewer hours work means they're not paying overtime, then all of a sudden we go, okay, well, these guys' costs are not going up, and so hence we probably don't have inflation concerns. And that's really how all this ties together.
Well, can we take this down to one more level, down to the actual loan officer level with the information that you give me? So, you know, we do a lot of training for loan officers and even the new ones, and sometimes you meet a loan officer that wants to play the market themselves, and in the training we are very risk-averse. We will tell them, you know, you might as well go to the casino if you're going to try and play the rate game with a customer. The quote and float is, you know, what we would describe it to a frontline person. You know, so kind of what's your thought on that locking versus float? Because I think most borrowers want to lock their rate as soon as they're talking with a loan officer and have a property.
Yes, Alice, you know, I am very strongly of the opinion that you should eliminate risk at any opportunity. And last week's jobs report is a perfect example of how our information can be used in a loan officer's everyday life. We're not trying to guess or predict that number, because, again, you see that the expectation was by the best and brightest that there'd be 350,000 jobs lost. Well, there were 400,000. well, who are we or who is a loan officer to say, well, I can guess or play or predict the market
right.
better than, you know, these guys
on Wall Street.
He's got
a different crystal ball, right?
Yeah, it's like, I got this thing figured out. So, moreover, how I use that information is to properly advise a client if they do come into my office on a Tuesday or Wednesday and make an application. We make them aware, if they say, I want to call you back Monday and I'll let you know if I want to lock. Now, I'm aware that there's a potentially big event Friday, and I'm going to inform them of that and say, we have the jobs report coming out every month. Single, you know, hands down, the single most important economic piece of economic news that we get. So I make them aware that's out there, and that does a couple of things. First of all, I've informed them so they don't call me back Monday and get blindsided by some rate increase or something. So I've
sure.
provided a good service to them, and you know, I'm an expert in that regard. But the other thing is it's a call to action for them, that rather than to sit there and do nothing, it's like, look, you know, rates overall are very good. It's the old bird in hand theory. Let's not get too greedy. You know, you get a 4 7/8, 5.25% rate, whatever it might be. Lock and eliminate that risk.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And customers really do want that guidance. You know, there's so much information. It's almost information overload now going on between everything on the internet and on television. And, you know, you can watch all 5 news channels at one time if you want to really make yourself crazy. So I like the idea of having an expert to follow.
And it's so important for us as professionals to remember that our average client is going to go through this process 3 or 4 or 5 times in their lifetime. And we go through it 3 or 4 or 5 times per day. And so I think it's our duty to them to manage the process rather than to allow them to go out there and think they have it all figured out by reading what they see on the internet or, you know, listening to, you know, whomever they might listen to. So
right.
I think it's just our responsibility to be a professional and advise them of the risks that are out there.
Well, and I think delivery of the information is something else people need to make sure they're good at, and that you're presenting information. You're not trying to push the borrower one way or the other, but helping them understand it on a very simplistic, level. And not that they couldn't understand complicated, but just the simpler it is, the easier it is then to make a decision, because it's such an emotional thing sometimes trying to get a mortgage or trying to purchase a new home. Well, that's all wonderful information. We're going to take our quick break here. We'll be right back with Lickin' on Lending.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com.
Hello, everyone.
716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
This is Alice Alvey sitting in for Dave again. He'll be back next week, and I want to make sure I bring Scott and Joe into this conversation as we go through our regular segment here with the legislative update. Thank goodness we didn't have too much happen while Dave is away here, but certainly a couple things that are important that we want to make sure we bring you up to date on. Last week we talked a little bit about the moratorium on HVCC being presented in the House. We now actually have language in print for this piece of legislation. Thank goodness. It's short, it's one sentence, and they didn't add in that we should be spending money on some other project and, you know, some pet project of someone. So it is just very straightforward. But, you know, Joe, we have talked about how can someone put in a piece of legislation that puts a moratorium on the Home Valuation Code of Conduct for 18 months. So those of you who may not be familiar with the Home Valuation Code of Conduct really puts some real hard and fast rules on lenders for the restricting who can order an appraisal, make sure it's someone who's not in commission sales ordering the appraisal, and many procedural items. This was a legal settlement between the New York Attorneys General and Fannie and Freddie. How can legislation undo this?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Clearly, with you know, basically the government in control of Fannie, Freddie, and certainly they've always been in control of FHA and VA, that they could suggest that those HVCC requirements be eliminated from their policies. But, you know, that then raises the next question of, will the aggregators, the big lenders, also choose to do that? You know, they've just gone through a very extensive process to implement HVCC. And now to say, all right, let's unwind all that, many of those people may say that we kind of like the added security we get through, or the perceived added security we get through HVCC, and may say, I'm just going to stick with what we have.
Well, and along the same lines, I mean, I totally agree with you, you know, that some of them might say, I like this process. It does take the ordering out of control of the salespeople and the mortgage brokers. And I know the Mortgage Bankers Association has tried to put together a group to try and get some feedback on, is HBCC as a whole worth completely throwing out, or are there parts of it that should be kept and it needs modification more than it needs a moratorium? Or is the moratorium designed to say, let's put it on hold and revisit what are the good parts and the bad parts out of this? To supplement this, the Appraisal Institute, and actually several appraisal industry groups, issued a letter on July 1st, and they issued this to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and put together some pieces to say, we really want FHA to eliminate its 1997 policy that puts a cap on appraisal fees. And so we've got, in their arguments, they're making the case that the appraisal management companies are taking a fee, and then the appraiser isn't getting paid fully, and therefore, or paid their normal, say, $350 fee, the appraiser's fee is reduced, and so that's hurting the quality of appraisals. You know, I think that's one of the biggest impacts out of HVCC is, you know, this letter seems to be focusing on it being just an FHA problem. I think it's a whole HVCC problem of the implication that somehow AMCs are the only way to go. Nothing against, you know, what it brings to a large lender for organization, but it's really been forced upon us.
You know, the HVCC, the appraisal group is saying, and it kind of makes sense that some of the best of their appraisers, are in fact saying, well, if HVCC is going to require that I only work through an AMC, I'm just going to start doing only commercial stuff.
Right.
And you know, it would make sense that somebody would go through that thought process. It's so much less rewarding for those guys, the appraisers, in that environment to decide I'm just going to go where I can make more money.
Well, and on the conventional side, you know, there isn't the same kind of written policies, and, you know, certainly you're working on the saleability of the loan and working for an audit. On FHAs, you have that extra dynamic of insurability and getting that loan insured as well as getting it sold. And so lenders are a little more sensitive to the cost of the appraisal, making sure they follow FHA policy. And so this idea of, well, you know, I can't just simply have the AMC raise their fees because you run into the issue of the splitting of the fee and the upcharging, and now do I start to have RESPA problems? So, you know, I think this is something that needs to continue talked about. So maybe that's where the moratorium comes in, is to let us kind of take a look and talk about the impact it's having in the market. Scott, how do you think the salespeople feel about HVCC?
Yeah, I alluded to that. You know, I think I said mess last week. The other adjective that comes to mind is train wreck. It's frustrating, I think, at the very least, for a lot of originators. And, you know, fundamentally, there are some sound ideas that went into it, but the implementation of it has been less than smooth, to say the least. You talk about the cost, you know, the appraisal cost to the borrower has gone up, and it's frankly, understandably so. You're talking about the originator of the loan now has to have a department to manage their appraisal process and handle any reconsiderations of value. There's an intermediary, one of these AMCs we've talked about, that needs to get their cut. And what's ending up happening is the appraiser down the line is getting squeezed. And, you know, there are appraisers we dealt with and did business with for many, many years that we paid a $300 or $350 fee, and they're being asked to accept a $200, $250 fee on appraisal work. And, you know, there's just no question but that begs the question of, am I going to get the same quality if I am squeezing his margins or her
margins? Right. Well, another piece that came up in our legislative update is the Supreme Court ruling. We mentioned this last week briefly, but we did get some additional clarification on it. So the Supreme Court ruled that the state attorney general can pursue national banks in enforcing of their consumer protection laws. But some of the restrictions on this are, under the ruling, the attorney general would not have the right to examine a national bank. So it's not like all of a sudden it opens the door for your state regulator to audit all the banks, as, you know, Joe and I, you had talked maybe was a possibility, but
right,
that appears to not be the case. They can't subpoena them either. However, they would expressly have the power to enforce applicable state laws through some kind of judicial proceeding. So, you know, the one that the Mortgage Bankers Association brought up was appraisal licenses. So they were concerned that some of the banks are able to use, you know, appraisers with a slightly lower level license versus maybe the level that the state requires. Do you see that this may have impact into any other area?
It sure seems like it's going to force all those institutions that have been under the federal guidelines to significantly add to their regulatory compliance departments, if only to again know that what the rules are and to set up the testing and the policies and procedures to abide by them. Seems like it's going to add a great deal more administrative cost.
Yeah, and I know we work a lot with companies that will say, well, you know, I've passed all these audits and I've had no problems. I've never been written up for anything, you know, or anything I've been written up for is minor. So, you know, okay, I'm going to have the state come into my national bank. I never necessarily had them looking at my operation before. But we really do find that, you know, if you have a different regulator, you have a different set of rules, and it's probably worth it for banks to spend some time checking their national or their state-specific policies and making sure they're not missing something. We've been into credit unions, and small community banks in particular, I think, might be more exposed than maybe the larger ones. Well, let's take a minute here for our next commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Hello, everyone. This is Alice Alvey again, sitting in for Dave as he's away this week. He will absolutely be back with us next week, and we miss him. It's my opportunity to let you all know what a great guy he is. We have absolutely feel like we have really met someone who's extremely intelligent, understands this industry at all levels, and for you guys out there who might be considering needing warehouse lines or other services or really looking at how to elevate your company to the next level, I can't recommend Mortgage Banking Solutions any higher than any is possible. Just the absolute value you can get from that entire team of people, and Dave especially. We just really enjoy working with him. So now we're moving into our segment on the hot topics, and I think one of the things that a lot of people are interested in is we did get today, if you haven't had a chance to check all your service links out there, we hope to summarize those for you, and that's Fannie Mae's announcement on the 125% LTV limit for the Refi Plus loans. Those of you who have been working with this product already, it's allowed a 105% limit up until now, and now they have just moved this up to being a 125 LTV. So it really does need to be a benefit to the borrower to look at doing a loan of this nature. Certainly a high LTV is a challenge. Now, I guess my question for you, Scott, in particular, is do we have a place to sell these 125 LTV loan?
You know, that's the big question, that they may say they're going to open that up, but, you know, in the fine print, lenders still have repurchase risk. And so you have to go through the thought process of, do I want to originate 125% loan with repurchase risk if I were to happen to make an innocent mistake in some other area and Fannie Mae says, We're not buying it. And it brings in also, Joe, you could speak to this too, the servicing of that. You know, is that going to perform as well as other loans? And do I really want to bring that potential servicing issue into my portfolio? So that remains to be seen. I have not seen anyone that jumped right out and said, I'll buy all the 125s
right.
you have, send them my way.
Well, it would seem to me like most of the loans originated that are the loan being refinanced. The originator already has the reps and warranties on that, and it may be that that person is much more inclined to say, I'm not adding to risk if I refinance this guy into a 125. But the guy who does not already have that risk really may think twice about it. Do I think about how much the loss could be if the value's right? You're now at 125. You're going to have an immediate 25% loss, and maybe even, you know, the extra 10 or 15%. So you could have a 30 or 40% loss on a loan if you had to repurchase that.
Yeah, so I'm a I'm a lender that doesn't service. You know, is this one of those announcements that's out there for the big huge companies to, you know, work with their existing refinance retention efforts or challenged loans and servicing more so than it is a product for your frontline loan officer at a lender or broker?
I think that's a very
good
question.
Yeah, what you're talking about there, Joe, is just like an FHA streamline. If you're already servicing the loan, hey, let's lower their payment and give them a better chance to make that payment. What risk do I have? But you're right to have somebody else step in and say, now I'll take that risk off your hands. That's the big question as to whether people will jump up and do that.
What have you guys had a chance to check out the pricing on this yet? I mean, is the pricing worth it? It looks like there is a loan level price adjustment and still the adverse market delivery charge.
I have not seen that, Alice. I'm sure it's going to be a higher priced loan.
Yeah, I've not seen. I couldn't tell you exactly what it is, but rest assured, you'll have to pay to play, so to speak.
Right, right. Well, and like you said, you know, that risk. I mean, you meet all different kinds of companies out there today, and some are just interested in that short-term income to get the loan to close and give me my check now, and I'll worry about the long-term implications after that. So I think it is something that companies have to really assess. Where is my risk tolerance, and is this a product for me that I can put on my books? Anything else we should add to that?
Alice, before we get off, I'd like to make a correction to last week. I made the mistake of saying last week that United Guaranty had pulled out of the Sand States, California, Nevada, Arizona, and Florida, and it was not United Guaranty, and for that I apologize. It was Radian that made that announcement. And so just want to try to set the record straight and hope that I didn't confuse anybody.
Well, I think overall the message is just have a heads up, and there are areas for the mortgage insurance companies are going to have to continue to take a look at where their risks are and identify, you know, changes accordingly. So thanks for making that correction. I hope everybody got that down. It's Radian that had made that announcement. Well, I want to be able to give you a little bit of a point here on FHA and the condos. FHA issued its mortgagee letter about the condominiums. Sounded like we were going to get a new opening with that, but we really, the spot condo requirements are not going to go away until October 1st of 2009. So I want to thank everyone for being here. We certainly wanted to make sure we brought you some good information, even though Dave couldn't be with us this week. We look forward to having him back with us next week, and I'm sure we'll have a lot more on the agenda as Congress and everyone else gets back up to speed after the holiday. See you all next week, and have a wonderful, wonderful week.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Joe. Bye, Scott.
Bye, Alice.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quoteline. delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, straight to your computer, email, or PDA. On the web at mbsquoteline.com. And Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. On the web at www.mortgage-u.com. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.